Hello and welcome to the live stream live. After a long 2-week holiday vacation, we are back live and talking to you. Going live on three platforms, Instagram Live, YouTube Live, and also on the Facebook Live. Hi, how are you? I hope you had a wonderful holiday and a magical new year. I hope nobody fought too much with their family. I surprisingly did not. We hosted Christmas this year and everyone got along really, really well, which was really, really great for the first time in the history of my family. As usual, we are sponsored by Lucas Roasting Company. They are a small family business nestled in the heart of Wolfboro, New Hampshire. And I'm very lucky that I know the Lucas family personally, and they are an incredible group of people. They make an amazing product that I actually use and that I use almost every single day. I'm kind of obsessed with it, so I have it mailed to my house, and you can too. With this code, the live stream live, you get 15% off your first order. That's any size. You could get one bag of coffee, 55 pounds of coffee, 15% off your first order, and it's totally worth it. How they do it is they're a craft roasting company, so they roast your coffee to order, and then they ship it to you within a couple of days, so it's extremely fresh. Use the code the live stream live to get 15% off your first order. So, Lucas from Wolfboro. Yes. So I usually get, I guess you know who they are, or you're doing me a very big fucking solid. But I don't get grounds. I get whole bean because I'm a coffee nerd, and I usually get their Italian roast or their espresso roast. And my wife likes the Mocha Java, which is like a lighter chocolatey flavor, which actually tastes really good. It's not overly chocolatey. Cool. So the mug today, I'm from Fort Worth, Texas. Thank you for being here from Fort Worth, Texas. I like Texas a lot. It's a great, great state. Today's show mug is a Shakespeare Insults mug, which you might have seen before in my weird Shakespeare videos, but it's one of my favorites. It just makes me feel so special, even though it's so insulting. So it's been 2 weeks. I've watched a lot of stuff and I've read a lot of stuff. So I'll condense this down so that we can get right to our guest, who's an incredibly awesome guy. His name is Jonathan Gregg. I've known him for quite some time now. We've worked together at the Metropolitan Opera. We've been in the same TV show together, which I'm excited to talk about, and a bunch of other amazing things, which I will list off once I look at my list again. But I'd like to quickly talk about Moana 2. Moana 2, I have a daughter and I have another daughter on the way. And while I have my issues with Moana 2, I feel it was rushed. The songs didn't make any sense. Specifically, the rock song sounded like Alexander Hamilton, but like Alexander Hamilton. It was a very like obvious, like this needs to sound like Lin-Manuel, but it's not, but it's gonna sound like it. But anyway, I love Moana 2. I love Moana as a story and as a character, specifically because I am a girl dad. I haven't seen a character or a story or a movie that empowers women and girls in a way so powerfully than this one. It is done with such a inward self-belief while also allowing other people to help you, which is a thing that it's such an important lesson for us all. Thank you, Disney. But we do listen to the soundtrack almost every day in the car. And while I want to drill my fucking brain out sometimes, when my 3.5-year-old screams out, "I am Moana," and it's happening right now, I get really emotional because she's being taught that she can do anything. And me and my wife, we do our best, but sometimes things that they watch do a much better job. Sometimes, not all the time. What's it say? It's so unbelievably rare that a girl-centric story is not a romance, which is, yeah, that's very true. This is about leadership, community, and adventure. It's amazing. It's true. It's absolutely true. And as for what I've been reading, I got back into the Dresden Files. I don't know if any of you know what that is, but it's like a paranormal, wizardy, but it's also like an investigation-y pseudo romance for dudes. It's a lot of fun. It's really lighthearted, but it's extremely, but what really makes it is all the like wizardy, magical, creaturey violence, which like really speaks right to me here. So as a longtime nerd and a longtime Lord of the Rings fan and just all things nerdy, it's just extremely, it's like wonderfully serialized. Like I think I'm on book like 12 of 15. And if you haven't, you should watch them. Not watch them. You should read them because they're really cool books. Yeah, I'll just talk about one thing. I just watched the latest season of Shrinking, which is also beautiful. I love Jason Segel. I love seeing Harrison Ford so fucking vulnerable and incredibly in touch with himself. Like, I know he's 80 now, and I'm sure that by the time that I'm 80, I'll be even more in touch. I'll be even more of an open heart because of, you know, having a girl really changes everything about you. And I'm having another one soon. So it's going to be a girly girl and me household. And the guy that I'm going to bring on, I look up to him a lot in this respect because he's taken on a lot of things that traditionally men don't do, which we will speak about more. But he paints his nails so that he can connect with his daughter. He learned how to braid her hair and all of these things that I've begun to do in just kind of like in a natural way. Not that I'm saying that I'm like, I'm so great, but it was a thing that I realized I needed to do for my daughter. And then just kind of out of nowhere, I noticed that Jonathan was also doing this for his daughter. And it's just seemed like it made me feel incredibly, incredibly seen in a way that I didn't expect. So I'm very excited for you to meet him. His name is Jonathan Gregg. You have seen him on, where is my list? You have seen him on, he was in Ocean's 8. He was in the White House Plumbers. He was in Kaleidoscope, where he played a very surly, magical prison guard. He was in The Blacklist, The Deuce, The Enemy Within, Ray Donovan, Shades of Blue, Jessica Jones, and he was in High Maintenance with me. Please welcome Jonathan Gregg. Hey, buddy.
Hey, man.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm better after that intro. Thanks, man. That's
you're welcome. I mean, it's all true, dude. Like, you are super cool, and you're in all that stuff. And, yeah.
That's true. Most of the cuts of Ocean's 8 you see, you won't actually see me in it. I was cut out of the theatrical release. You can find me on, if there's still any DVDs around, but I did film that movie. I filmed it, and I'm in it some places, but not...
Oh, man, really? Yeah. I hate that shit.
Yeah, but it's a good... I've always taken it... Well, at first it sucked, and then my wife wisely said, well, you gotta have one of those stories, right? You got to have the in the chair on the talk show thing you were cut out of story. And so I said, yeah, that'll be a good one to have for that then.
That'll be a good one too. Yeah, I thought I was going to get cut out of 7 Seconds on Netflix. That was like my first big thing. Not because it was a small role, but because I fucked the shoot up so bad. Like, I thought I was never going to work again. And then I did. But so I thought they were going to cut me out. But yeah. But it's cool. I mean, did you work with anyone cool in that?
It was a fun little role. It was I always compare it to in the original three in 11, 12, and 13, Andy Garcia had those two twins, those big bald guys who were always on his back, his security, his goons, his kind of guys, his go-to guys or whatever. So I was basically that for Anne Hathaway. So I was it was me and this comedian in town in New York here called Dante Nero. His name is Dante Nero, just a big black guy, big bald black guy, big the gauge earrings, tatted up. He's a really funny, big cool, fun dude. So me and him were the security duo for Anne Hathaway. And we were sent to trail Sandy Bullock and Kate Blanchett. And so we were kind of spying on the whole mission. And then we had to take messages back to Anne Hathaway. And in a very Ocean's-y way, we were a part of the way that the Anne Hathaway's kind of an enemy in that, and then there's the other seven women, and then they end up working together. And by the end of it, they're working together. And So we were actually the linchpin. We were, we were like intentionally kind of small and forgettable throughout the film, and then we were just via the plot, we were the connection for the whole thing. Not that we had any much important, not we, that we didn't have a lot of important stuff to do with that, but we were in fact the vehicle that got the information from one side to the other. And then it came down to it, and I honestly, I think what happened, and I have no idea, who knows, and whatever. And the smarter people who get paid a lot more to make these decisions are the ones that made the decisions. I
Yeah.
have no hard feelings, but I feel like it was in a time where it was a they put the female lead, the actors, the women actors in front for this, and they wanted to kind of celebrate them, and they really did away with like everything that wasn't about the eight of them. In fact, there are
Oh,
all
okay.
of the original 11, except for Clooney, except for Danny Ocean. The other 10, 11 guys from that original one made cameos, and I guess not bringing back too. There's like references or cameos from all of those guys, and they cut almost all of those too. So I like in that way,
Well,
I
that
like
makes
to think
sense
that I'm in the
then.
company of the original
Yeah.
11. Or, so like, and I get, yeah, I get it. Like they want to focus on the female leads they had gathered. It was a powerhouse of women in that cast, and it was a bummer to I literally in a very Oceansy way like. Went to see the very first showing. It was a midnight showing out in Astoria at the Kaufman Astoria, the Regal right there at the near at Kaufman.
Oh, yeah.
And they had like shut down the ticket booth. They had already shut it down. There was no one. I don't know why they weren't, but they weren't selling tickets, and it was a midnight showing. And so I like, and the doors were all locked because they were done selling tickets. And so then I like waited by an exit. I snuck in through an exit. I dipped in to watch like part of Deadpool before the other one started, and then I dipped over to watch the Ocean's 8. And then I'm sitting there, and I'm feeling very cool. I'm feeling very Ocean's-y about it because I kind of broke into watching the whole thing anyway. And then like the first time that I'm supposed to be seeing the plot comes and goes, and I'm like, okay.
Oh, man.
And like I was bummed to not have gotten invited to the premiere, but I was also like, all right, well, don't let me be too far up my own ass. It wasn't that big a role. I'm sure it's fine to not get invited to the premiere. So when I'm watching it there, I'm by myself at midnight, and there's 12 people in the audience, and
Yeah.
then like the next moment I'm supposed to be in comes, and the next plot line, like the plot points keep coming along and going past without myself and Dante in the scenes. And then the whole reveal comes up and we're nowhere to be found. Then I was like, well,
Well, I guess
I
it was cut
guess
out of the movie. Oh shit. Yeah.
well, okay.
It's hilarious.
So
But
it was a
that
bummer,
happens
but
all
yeah,
the
it was great.
time. I mean, were you in the credits still? Because if you are, then you get residuals.
No, and that is the biggest bummer. And I think that's a
Boo.
like, and I'll tell you this, and I'll do a little. I don't know if your audience is cares about the inside baseballness of the business, but I'll take a moment if you'll indulge me for a moment.
Please, I will indulge you. You talk about what you want.
It was my first. Studio film. I had not booked a studio film before this. In fact, I got my card for this. I had my waivers, and I had not signed. I had not picked up my equity or my SAG card yet. And I did. This film came along, and I was able to scoop up my card.
What does it
And
mean to get waivers?
so I had worked on. I had been a non-union back. I'd done background work and stunts for a few for a handful of different things in New York, and like. On the day, the size of the thing ended up being large enough that they kept like got a couple of my waivers from John Wick, the first one that was shot in New York, and a couple of the stunts. I wasn't doing major stunts; I was doing background stunts, but they were big enough that it was featured enough. You can see me running around in the Turkish bath scene. You can see me running around in there and jumping into a pool, and so I got a waiver, which means I got recognized as what would have been a union size role. For a non-union performer. And so you get, I think it's three or four
Three,
of
yeah.
those. Three.
Three.
You get three of those. And then you can slash have to join the union the next time a gig like that comes up. So
The
I was sitting on that for a minute.
have to part is what they don't really explain very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They make it sound like it's a great thing to be earning. And like it's kind of like the equity. What were the old equity points? Like you could be like a member.
Yeah, you could be EMC, which was like pre-equity, and then you
Yeah.
could still do non-ec,
Yeah, and
but
you could
you
earn those
earn
points
in,
up to it. And
and
it's
then
kind of
you
like that, except for there's the must join
the
part
must
of
join.
SAG after waivers. Yeah. So I did that. I took my SAG card for it. It was a cool gig. I was only gonna be on for like six. My original contract was for 6 days, and they were all spread out through the shoot. And then this to me is a very is it is it I won't say a very poor business decision. I will say it was a very surprising business decision. I got a call from my agent, and they're like, "Listen, production doesn't know what their schedule is going to be like, so they're going to buy you out for the next 30 days at the same day rate on the I signed the original contract on." So I got paid for 30 days at a day rate. They didn't go to a separate contract at all,
They
and I was
didn't
like,
give you like a weekly rate? It was it for
"Nope,
every day?
nope." I got paid every day for 30 days just to stay in town because
Holy
they weren't sure when the
shit.
shoot. Yeah, so it was like way too much money to have made for this film that would have been so. It was 6 days of shooting, which was fun. It was great. All those things, and it was still was only 6 days. I still only worked the days that I mean, they moved around a bunch. I had to be flexible, but I only filmed 6 days, and I got paid for 30. I got paid for 33 days because the first half of my filming happened before they made that change.
Was it
So I got,
scale?
yeah.
Oh my
So,
God, dude.
yeah. So like my first gig, my first, real gig at this kind of level. It also, I just joined the union. I got picked up as a nominator for the SAG Awards like right away. So I was like, and I was like living large. My wife and I were going to all these cool events. We were
Oh
getting like
man,
wined and
you are living
dined
it
by
up.
production, and I just made like way too much money for this shoot. And then I was thinking, we talk about residuals. I was like, man, I don't know what Ocean's 8 is going to do, but Ocean's 11, 12, and 13 are on TV all the time. If
Yeah.
I get to take this, if I take this salary into an Ocean's style residual world, I'm going to love this. And then I got cut, and then I did not even, I feel like they were like, "Well, we're not going to pay him all this money for the rest of time, so just let's make sure we take that credit away
Let's
from
just
him in
cut that shit out.
the
Nothing's worse. I mean, dude, nothing's worse than like making your wife sad about a thing that might have happened.
credits."
Like my TV show that I was on got canceled, and I was supposed to be in the whole thing, and my wife was like super amped. Like after season two, that's like when you renegotiate and all that stuff. And like we were talking about it, like we were like, oh fuck yeah, it's the season three renegotiation. Maybe you won't have to work anymore. And then we got canceled.
Yeah, it's like that real, like it's an experience, and it's like in the journey of like, I don't know, mindfulness and like mental health, being able to want something and then be able to let it go is a big, but it's like, yeah, man, it's tough. It's tough to like see that, and you can't help but start doing that math and being like, oh, and from my business mind, it's one thing to be an artist and like, yes, you get to like flex your craft muscles and you get to do the thing that you feel like you were made to do. But also, those of us that are trying to do it professionally, it's a business, and you start doing the math on that, and you're like, okay, we're heading. This trajectory is what I've been looking for. This is what I've been working my whole life for. Here we go. This is here it comes, and then just no.
It's really hard to not just be like in the school and just be an artist that's like, I'm just gonna express, I'm just gonna feel the way I feel, I'm just gonna try stuff and fail fucking magically fail, learn and learn and learn. And you still do that, but like I say that my most blissful time in the industry was my first 3 years out of school, because I didn't know anything about the industry. I was like, oh, you just go audition and you just have a great time and you just figure it out, and then someone will see you. It's like, no one's gonna fucking just see you, first of all. Two, it's a fucking business and you have to like make money in order to stay in it, and you have to spend money in order to stay in it. It's like all this stuff that you're not taught, because it's just like every other business. It's a business. There's just artists in it.
And I feel like it's a they a big part of the education of the industry kind of sets us up for failure by not really explaining it, for me at least. Maybe some programs do, maybe there are ways to learn about it, but no one really explained to me the business side of it, the business side of the business. There was a lot of like work ethic and discipline, and a lot of like really beating it into us that like, sure, you might not be able to, you're not going to be able to control your destiny in this business. There will be a lot of choices made that you don't have any control over. But like you're talking about, like the actual economics of the business is not something that I learned about at all.
No, I learned that by fire. Like it was a like I remember I got back from my master's program and I was meeting agents. And it was the first week that I was back. And I met with an agent. I'll remember her forever. She's probably still working, and this isn't a bad story, but her name is Meg Pantera. She's one of the old guard. She's probably gonna retire soon. But I went in and I she's like, you did the like old school mailers with your headshot in the big
For
envelope with your
sure,
resume.
yeah.
And I went in and I did a monologue for her, and then I did like a scene with a friend. And she was like, "Oh, great, this is all great." And she was like, "Well, what are you doing in the city right now?" And I didn't know what that meant. I was like, "I just got back from school a week ago." And she was like, "That's nice. What are you doing in the city right now?" I was like, "I have a master's degree, Meg." And she was like, "Nobody gives a fuck about your master's degree, Josh." And I was like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "What are you doing in the city right now?" And at the time, I was so fucked up, I didn't know what to say. And then she was like, "All right, come." I was like, "I don't know what that means, Meg." And then she said, "Well, you come back here when you know what that means." And what she meant was like, "Who are you taking acting classes with? Are you, are you in any like readings? Are you ch checking out any of the theaters?" Like it was like, "Are you active in the New York scene?" And that's what that question means, but nobody says like, "Hey, you have this training. The moment that you arrive, you need to immerse yourself in the fucking world." And for some, types of people, it's different than other types of people. Like, I'm a character actor, so are you. It's like character actors are treated very differently than like ultra hot things right out of school. Not that we're not like super handsome and nice to look at, it's just we're not like bird men. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, male ingenue was never a word in my
Oh
type
no,
at all. My breakdown has never been that at all. And I
no,
even
mine
knew,
is
like, I
black.
knew it was going to take longer. I knew it was going to be a later thing. My high school drama teacher was like, had all sorts of faith in me and was very supportive, but always said, "It's going to take you a long time because you're going to age into your type. Like,
That's
you're
what I was
not
told
at
too.
18. You're not your type yet. You're going to age into it."
Yeah, I was told when I turned like 35, I would never stop working, and it turns out they were right. And I was so mad at them at the time because I was like, "Wow, well, now what about now? I'm in my early 20s. Like, I'm supposed to be like, this is where I'm supposed to be doing stuff." And they're like, "Yeah, but you're gonna really get your work when you're like late 30s, 40s, 50." And I was like, "Fuck you."
Fuck that. That's too long, man. I'm good. I'm good right now. I'm good. I've got it right
I got
now.
some skills right now. I've got fresh knees. I can do things. I can walk around. Like,
I don't have any
God.
kids. I don't have any kids I gotta worry about. I have all the bandwidth I can offer. I'm good right now. This is the time to use me.
Kids, man. Kids have actually made me better at this.
Yeah, there's a big part of it that too, for sure.
Like, just like the speed of things now, like, because time is so precious and we have so little of it that I find that, especially with my auditions, there's no time for me to like second guess myself. I just know that I'm gonna, that's the take, and I know it now. Whereas pre-kids, I would be like, "Oh, is it the take? Oh, I don't know. Did I fuck that up?" And like now it was like a fucking switch flip, dude.
And
Like,
I don't know about for you. For me, it's like before kids, certainly before my wife, and I mean really kids was the I don't know, biological, the cellular change is like, the auditions, there was it would get to the point there was nothing more important than that audition. And so then yeah, then you're second guessing all of it. I'm always like, I'm anxious about it. I'm trying to I'm high I'm put I'm swallowing all of these feelings because it's all there's so much anxiety because it's so important. And then once kids came along, first of all, I'm too tired to think anything's that important. And second of all, like nothing else is as important as my kids, So it's like, I don't give a shit, man. Like, cool. If I get the job, I need the job. I would love the money. And that's where, I've had to open up my life anyway for those kinds of things because I gotta figure out my life with my kids. But the work that I've booked since having kids, I credit a lot of that to not having the energy to care as much and not really genuinely. Oh, I just thumbs
What
up
is
myself.
that?
I don't know, but I think that by counting with my thumb, I thumbs up myself.
Oh, is that
Yeah, there we go.
awesome? I like it. Thanks, platform.
What was this? Oh yeah, just that like I just realized I didn't have the bandwidth to care as much. I didn't have the priorities were not such that I cared as much. And then the way this business is.
Yeah, when you don't care as much, that's when it works, because you're just being you and you're being fucking natural, and everything that your acting teacher's ever told you, like, just live your life and gain life experience, and it'll come more like, just like, especially with having kids, like, it's not like I wasn't emotionally available, but now I am like a fucking open wound all the time. And it's like, I don't not like it. I love it. I have so much more emotional availability. And like I said, not like it wasn't there before, but God, it's just always there.
Yeah.
Like watching my daughter live all the time, experiencing stuff, loving stuff, loving things again. Like, oh, I really like this thing. It just, it's watching, I don't know.
It's like a brand new, it's when you get to watch a smooth brain, a brand new human experience, human encounters for the first time, human experiences for the first time. It's like, it kind of gives you for me, it's really given me a reappreciation of those things. And they also drive me fucking crazy.
Oh, like,
it's insane. I'm so like, I'm at a boiling point almost all the time. But then when you can like, when it gets there and you're like, wow, they are learning a new, they're literally right now learning a new thing and they're excited to learn this and they're excited to be experiencing it. That is like, you know,
what is the one thing that like really like sticks with you? Like mine is the first time that she ever tried chocolate.
That's a good question. A good first. So my son, when he was a baby, when he was 6 months old, he was a Gap model. And when I took him to his first audition, I feel like I was like, I knew how to handle a room. It's a room full of, you know, babies and it's crazy. It's chaos in there, a baby audition.
Yeah.
But there's eventually a point where it's finally his turn. And he loved people from jump. He was like, he loved eyes on him and he loved people. But I literally watched him turn it on for a camera, and he has no context for what a camera is, but he understood that this thing was like focused on him and that these two people were like paying attention to him. And I watched him turn it on and I was like, oh shit, man, this kid like has it. I don't want to like
family there. Yeah
I don't want to like, I've worked very hard to not push that, because the moment I saw it, I was like, oh well, I can run with this for the rest of our lives, let's do this. But it was like I tried to leave that where it is and let it be just like a special thing. And he's still like a very sweet, very engaged, very engaging. And he booked that commercial, and when he was filming, they wanted the babies just being babies. Like there was different stuff. There was a teddy bear, the Brennan bear is the Gap, whatever, teddy bear. And it's so they had a bunch of different babies doing stuff with the teddy bear. And my son would not stop looking at the camera. And he's got these like, especially as a baby, they were bright, big, bright blue eyes, gorgeous eyes. And he was like just only looking right into the lens of the camera, but it was like really sweet. And finally they were like, the directors were like, I think we got to use this kid's like beautiful and will not stop looking at us. They was like, he was following around the room everywhere they went with the camera. They could not find an angle that he wouldn't find them. And it was just like, for me, I was like, yeah, this guy like knows, he wants to connect. He like, yeah, he lights up when he realizes that it's time to connect with someone. He lights up. And that's still awesome. He's 5 and a half now. He's in kindergarten, and sometimes he's a giant shit, but he's still like, you know, he's still like, man, can he connect? And I know I'm biased, but boy, oh boy, can he just cut right into the center of you.
Yeah, you have to love your kids or else what the fuck did you have them for? So yeah. It makes sense. So take me on this journey. You're originally, are you originally from Alabama?
I am. Yeah. I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama.
Yeah. So you came from a place that historically isn't very open, and you're an artist from there, and you've made your way here, and you are, in my opinion, one of the like non-toxic masculinity role models. Thanks, that man. We have right now, and the internet seems to agree. You have blown the fuck up in a way that I'm very, very, very happy to see. I mean, and just what you're talking about is not a thing that men typically talk about in general in our stupid ass country. So, take me on that ride, man, from Bama to the East Coast to where you are now.
Yeah, I think that you're right about Alabama, and what most people think about Alabama is, frankly, there's a lot of truth, right? There's a lot of truth to what that state is, how it works as a culture. I will say, I'm kind of a benefit of my own environment. I'm a product of my own environment. I benefited from it. Huntsville is, there was a NASA base there. And so they were bringing in engineers. There was an army base there just for a moment of anthropology here. There was an army base, and then they built a NASA base there because there was enough space to build rockets there. And for these engineers, they brought in a bunch of Germans, but also people from all over the
Germans.
world and the country. So kind of like this random spot in North Alabama got this external injection of culture. All these people came in from other places, and they were like, "Well, we fucking do art where we're from, so we're going to bring theater with us. We're going to create." So there was like the community theater was better than what I won't say better because everyone says that. There was more money behind the community theater in Huntsville than in a lot of places. And like, I went to a magnet high school for performance. I saw a show when I was in like third grade, and I loved it. And I asked my mom if it was like how to. Kids do that. I saw Oliver at the community theater, and I asked how do kids do that, and she took me to an audition for Christmas Carol that fall, and like that's how I spent my childhood, was doing community theater shows.
That's great.
And I think I had a I was like a, I think that now has benefited me. I had a balance because I also was in Alabama. I played sports. I wasn't like an all-star, but I played baseball. I played a little bit of football until it conflicted with the spring musical. I played soccer. I played sports. I was like a dude who played sports and also did theater, and I went to a magnet high school. And going to college, I went to Belmont University in Nashville. I was not going to do theater. I very much had the mindset of like, there's not a way to make a career out of that. That's a fun thing that I like doing. And then I was in school for one semester, and in that semester, I like had done an opera with the music program at school. I had done a play in the Black Box Theater, and I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. Like, this is
It
what I.
just takes you, man. Like, if you're supposed to do it, there's you just do it. Like, you're like, all right, I guess this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened. And so then I majored in musical theater. I moved to New York in 2005, and I've been here ever since. And like there was a lot of like grinding it out. Like my musical theater career did not take off. I got here and was like, oh yeah, this is what they're talking about. People are good here. It's different here. And so respectfully, I was like, oh, I'm probably not ever going to be famous for my singing voice. I'm probably not going to be musical theater. I'm not a Tony Award-winning singer at coming out of school like that. So
Well, I
what I
mean, I don't know, man. You don't
sure
know that.
sure 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 that, well, and now I've like I even back then I said like, cool, well, if I can get into TV and film, then I'll work my way around into being in Chicago someday as the stunt cast, and then I'll work my way back into Broadway. I'll be that's fine.
Yeah, that's what I said about being in the park. But
And so I guess that so I've ended up now. I'm 42 years old. I got a 4-year-old daughter, a 5.5-year-old son. And you to talk about like the journey that got me to where I am now, and I really appreciate the of all the things, all the very kind things that I've liked hearing you say about me. That non-toxic masculinity, I think, is my most proud moniker that I carry when people talk about me.
It's important.
And I totally agree. And I think that the one of the biggest things for me is like I never made a shift in my life. I never had to like take my belief structure and like really pivot it and like really change it up. There are some things that I've changed. Like I grew up in the church, and I've changed a lot of my relationship with faith and with monotheism and whatever. That's its own conversation. But as far as like my relationship with masculinity, all of the pieces that I was taught in Alabama in the 80s and 90s still fit the way that I think they fit. There's just like when I look at now the when I look at what that is now and that brand of masculinity, there's just this thick layer of fear on top of it. There's this thick
Sure.
layer of I mean, really, however you want to slice it, I think it comes down to fear. And so like I might have been when I was a child, I might have been sheltered from some of the overt racism. And so it's Alabama, you see some racist shit, but like
Sure.
that's a lot of times it was like that's over there, that's not the people, the people who are productive in society are not like that. And then you get out and you realize like, oh yeah, you are, you just like try to cover it up a little
You
better, but
hide
like
it a little bit better, yeah.
but that's still just weak. So to me it's like I didn't shift at all. Like you guys were either lying about what you thought masculinity was, or you forgot, or you've gotten scared and you've retreated inside that to this other like just messed up gross version of it that is to me the exact opposite of masculinity. And so it's been easy to like take some of these things and and once I realize there's a little like once there's a platform and people like hearing that, people connect with it, and people want to like it grows and there's feedback. And I get excited to hear that there's other people out there who think like me And you know, it's kind of it, then it starts to grow, and then it becomes like, oh yeah, like let's galvanize this, let's like get this word out there. And I think you're doing a great job of that too, is like, let's
Thanks.
like fucking these dudes, a lot of these dudes are loud and that's their only thing. Like it's so depressing, it's so disappointing that so many young men in the country look at like Nick Fuentes or like who's
Yeah,
that
or
fucking
like
kickboxer, like
Andrew Tate.
yeah, Andrew Tate, like
Yeah.
as real man. Like that's so gross and disappointing. So like I honestly, like that's why I feel empowered and emboldened for guys like us to be a little louder than we might have been before, because it's like, well, no, that's fucking garbage. That's weak stuff. And if young men need to if they need an understanding of masculinity, then I think it's up to guys like us to show them that there is a stronger way to do it.
I think that's important, especially with men that look like us too. I mean, we are both on the larger, more muscular side, and we are classically depicted in media as the exact opposite of who we actually are as people. And one of the things that I've tried to do with like anyone that I've ever played is infuse a bit of this non-toxic mask in there. For better or for worse, it's either worked really well or I've been told to sh stop doing that shit. But I've tried because we have we're straight white dudes or whatever, but like we're like our own like part of that classical substructure where we're like still viewed as horrifying, even more so than like you're just like classic straight white dude because we're the big ones that can hurt the shit out of you. So
I mean, that's what
it's
most of my career has been. It's kind of the opposite of what you just said. Most of my stuff is like all of my TV credits, my one episode TV credits, almost to a T, they are, I got beat up by the principal or one of the surrounding principals for saying something racist or homophobic.
racist,
Like it was all like that's what it like. I just look like the guy who says something offensive. And I kind of like clocked that, and I realized that, and I realized like, instead of getting all butthurt about that and being offended and making that about me, maybe recognizing like, oh yeah, people get really like that is a natural or like a, I don't, maybe not natural, but at this point, a learned reaction to people who look like us is like the
yeah.
expectation that we're going to say something shitty or do something shitty.
Right. Well, where I live, because I live out on Long Island, and it's a very let's just say red area. And especially in my town, there's a lot of folks with interesting flags, and like a lot of fun Rambo body pictures and things like that happening out here. They just assume that they can talk to me about their weird racist shit, and they'll just like I'll be at like a bar or at the local craft brewery just trying to have a nice day, and some fucking Goomba shit face walks into my like world and just starts to like talk to me about why like Kamala Harris is a fucking piece of shit. And I'm just like, can you just fuck off? Like I'm just trying to have an IPA. Like leave me alone. I don't
And to
believe
me,
what you
like
believe.
that, those guys, like how, what a little triggered snowflake talking about, like someone who's that person, their brain is totally owned by these people. Like all they can think about is a progressive thinker, or God forbid, a black woman in charge, or whatever it is. It has
A
taken
woman,
over their
fuck,
mind, and
not a
they
woman.
cannot deal with it.
Listen,
And
man, because
again,
I
like that's
hear
like, how is
that
that
their
a how is that an
periods attack
example?
bears, so I don't think they should be in charge. Do you want bears in the White House, John? No, but it's true. But it's because they don't critically think. I was like having a conversation about this with my wife like today. Like, critical thinking is mostly gone in our country. Like the idea of like having to question or challenge a thing is so it like nobody wants to, like they just want to go get like hammered and like sit down, and that's more up like more appealing than like having to ask a fucking question about something. So they like hear a bunch of shit, and I'm like I used to love Joe Rogan like so much, dude. Like I still think he's like havesy havesy with like a lot of the shit. Like he'll just like talk to anybody, but he just platforms people that just like say psychopathy craziness out of their fucking mouths, and then people like just ingest it. They're like, fuck yeah, that's what life is. I'm gonna go like eat snakes and punch women in the fucking tit. You know, like it's crazy to me. But
yeah, and I try to, especially like, and I'm sure that you see a lot of this. I mean, it happens no matter where you are, but like especially on social media with the platform, it becomes pretty siloed pretty quickly. Like it is a binary system, and I try to make a point to like in any of the stuff and in any of my videos and in my real life, I am not speaking to a political party. I'm not speaking to a good of one. I'm not speaking ill of one. I'm speaking ill of rapists. I'm speaking ill of misogynists. I'm speaking ill of hate-criming homophobes.
And well, you get a lot of pushback for that.
Well, yeah, if you want to lump yourself in with those people and tell me that you're on their team, well, then, yeah, fuck you too. Like, I'm not coming at an entire political party at all. I'm not even worried about your politics. I'm worried about the individual personal choices that the people that you are promoting and supporting, the choices that they make and the choices that they promote and support. And I'll come at those. And if you need to tell me that like you're on that same team with them, like if you got to defend the Proud Boys to me, then fuck you too. Like I have no time for you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like you're taught, like, especially in like our career path, that like you've got to be kind of like middle of the road. And I've left that far behind. Like,
yeah,
it's like I cannot be tolerant of the intolerant anymore. It hurts me. I have too many people in my life that I love that if I chose that path, I would hurt them. And I'm not perfect. I have hurt them in the past because we're always learning and we're always trying to change. And it's like I've said shit that wasn't good, and I've acted in ways that weren't fucking good. But I've tried to learn as best as I can from that shit, and I'm still fucking up. Like I'm not perfect. No, nobody's perfect.
Yeah. Well, and like in the parenting world too, I think about that a lot too. It's the same kind of thing. Like, you know, like there's a lot of kind of progressive parenting, I don't like the term gentle parenting, but if you look at respectful parenting or whatever you want to call it, kind of a different style of parenting, which is just like, let's acknowledge that children, while they might be children with smooth brains and very few experiences, still have emotions that they feel fully, and we can respect that those are real. We can understand that that is real, so that we don't create adults who second guess their emotions or stuff them way down. But having said that, I might approach things different with my kids than people did in the 80s and 90s, but I still pop off all the time. I'm still a dick to them way too often. Like I'm like, the only difference right now is like, I acknowledge it. I go and I say, hey man, I'm sorry. What you were doing there needed to stop. It was unsafe, or it was whatever. It was unkind or whatever, but I got mad because I get mad. That was not a you thing. That was a me thing. I am not good at controlling my emotions. I'm sorry, dude. You know, or my daughter, same thing, as often as I can, because it happens on the daily. I mean, I on the daily yell at some point or do something. Yes. Yeah, something that comes across as too mean, because they don't understand they don't know me in the context of 42 years. They know me in the context of being their dad for 5 years. And when I get mad, it's very scary. They don't know what grown men being mad looks like at all. They know me being mad. And so then I have to take into account like, okay, let's at least walk through this so they don't start internalizing all of that and taking that as like, okay, this is how they make people feel, so they have to change what they're doing so that people don't get mad at them for their own safety. They've got to pay attention to things like that. I can't change. I mean, I'm working on changing. I have yet to be able to change the natural reaction and all of the impulsive reactions. And so the best I can do is like acknowledge to my kids that I'm learning, that I'm still trying.
That's important, you know, because it's what we didn't get that shit. We just got it. We just got the pain portion without the explanation. And not that it doesn't feel bad, like you said, but you like hope it'll, because you're learning too. Like you like teach you how to be a better human, and you hope that you are teaching them to also be better because of how you're learning. So
yeah,
it's the circle.
That's like
the
thing that, and you know, like you when you said before about being wanting to learn and wanting to grow, like to me that's the thing. And I my parents did a great job for being in the 80s and 90s in Alabama. They did. I'm proud of who I am, and they were a big part of that, so they did a great job. There's things that I am doing different as a parent, but I think that one of the main things is not the acts themselves, but just the ability, the acknowledgement that I'm not perfect. That, like, I don't think that my parents or their friends or like the adults at the time when I was a kid really understood how to acknowledge their mistakes in a way that like resonated with children. So like for me, I try to be, I don't know, overly acknowledging of my mistakes when I when even if it's not like being angry, if it's whatever it is, like if they just see me do something that, you know, kids are great at, like they learn a rule and then they're gonna call you out for it the moment you do something else, you know, like whether it's driving or whatever it is. And I wanna be like, shut up, you don't get it, you don't know yet, like whatever. But I try to be like, you're right, ma'am, that was not very safe of me. And let me, there's the fear that I'm gonna like, that I need to look perfect to them so that they feel safe. So they feel like the person in charge has got it all under control. But I think that we've learned, and I think that, you know, we are testaments to acknowledging that that's not really true, that you can be in charge, that vulnerability does not mean actual weakness, that you can still be a leader, you can still be in charge, you can still keep everyone safe, you can still provide and protect and acknowledge your mistakes and make mistakes and be able to learn from those and grow.
It's crazy to me that like they just let you walk out of the hospital with a kid. Like they don't
Good
ask you any
Lord.
questions. They don't ask if you have a house, if you have a job. You know, like they walk you to a car maybe, and they're like, "Have a good time." You know, like because you know, I've got some things under control and I understand what I'm doing, but like I feel like most of the time I'm just kind of like winging the fuck out of it, and you're just
Dude,
trying to not fuck it up. You know, like,
they're growing and changing every day. So every experience, every day, we're having new experiences. I'm doing things, I'm taking L's more than I've ever taken L's in my life because I'm doing things for the first time. I'm learning a new thing too. I'm like, well, okay, got that one wrong. We'll try again tomorrow.
yeah, like I thought like we totally fucked up potty training. Like I thought like, oh, we fucked this. Like she's gonna be peeing in her pants until she's 15, and then she's gonna have all these like piss issues, like all this piss trauma, and then I'm gonna have to go to therapy for a pee trauma. And then it was just like, just I just needed to like breathe and chill. It's like she's just taking an extra day. Just take the extra day and try some more, and then now she's fine. She does a great job. But it's just little things that you get all fucked up over that are really nothing. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just
Absolutely.
because you
So much of the
care, man.
time.
It's just because you care.
And yeah, it that you know, that can compound over and over again so often for so long. Like, yes, it is because we care and so we want to try, and then when we fuck it up, then we're overthinking it, and then I'm anxious about that, and then I'm worried about that, and then my fuse is shorter already because I'm mad at myself, but they don't know that part. So then I'm mad at myself even more because I'm taking it out on them and they don't even know that part, and it just goes downhill from there. So but you got to go like, all right, the best I can do is try my best, and when I get it wrong, sometimes the new thing for me is like, I've always been very proactive about that, about saying like, all right, I got that one wrong. I'm gonna do better. I'm gonna try harder. Whatever, I can change this. And now there's times I'm like, I pop off and I get mad and I like yell, or I like have a mean face, meaner than is really deserved. But whatever they were doing was something they needed to change. They needed a behavior shift, and I needed to make that happen. And so then I start getting defensive because I'm proud of the fact that I've taught my kids to tell me if they don't feel comfortable with the way that I'm acting, if they think I'm being too mean or they think I'm being too loud. And I'll say like, I yell because I have a hard time controlling my temper. I didn't grow up in a way that taught me that. So I would love for you guys to learn that so you don't have to deal with this. And so now they'll be like, Dad, you yell a lot. And I'll be like, well, you don't listen. So yeah, yell, you know? Then I have to
Listen to me about shit, so I yell at you.
Then I have to like resolve that and be like, all right, even in my defensive state right now, let's take a moment and go like, all right, ma'am, yes, okay. We can talk about the boundaries that we need to hold here because you need to not be doing that thing you were doing. And I told you 8 times to not do that thing anymore. But you're right. My yelling is a me thing, and I'm going to keep working on that. I'm going to keep working on not doing that.
That's a me thing, not a you thing. I could probably like gently read direct you using something else, but I yell. I'm gonna bounce back to the acting for a moment, and then I'm gonna bounce back to the parenting thing. Like it's a small thing. But we were both in the same episode of High Maintenance, which was a really fun show to be on. So I'm specifically bringing this up, and I'll explain it in a moment. But they wanted me to be naked on the show, and I told them, "Hey guys, hey, I've talked to my wife. I have to ask my wife. And they were like, "You have to ask your wife?" I was like, "Yes, I have to ask my wife. She's my partner in life. She's gonna want to know if, like, you know, millions of people are gonna see my schlonger. And it has to be for like a good reason. So what is the reason?" And they're like, "Oh, we just want to get you naked coming out of a shower." And I was like, "I'll take that back to her. But I guarantee you we're gonna get a no back." So she said no, mainly because the money wasn't enough, which made me feel good because I was like, "Oh, so you understand that it's about like if they want to use my pingy, then they gotta pay for it." So I said no and everything was fine, but your scene was a incredibly graphic threesome, and the character was your biological, well, not really, but was your biological brother was the third. So you were like Eiffel Towering this person, and it was done really well, and it was really fun and really funny. But how did your wife react to that?
That's yeah, it's really funny. And that's funny. It's a funny juxtaposition here, our two versions of this, because my wife and I love we were huge fans of the show as a web series. Like loved the show as a web series. Loved Ben and like what Ben and Kathy were doing as a web series. We thought, well, this is like, I mean, and we were right. They got picked up by HBO. Like it was an incredible show.
It's a fucking great show.
And then the first season was incredible. And so then the second season is the premiere of the second season, and the audition was really fun. And then the call comes in, and the call came in with not only a nudity writer but a sex writer, and it was like very specific about, and it was long. It was a long, detailed list of the kinds of simulated things that we might do, that we might do. And so we talked. I so yeah, I took that list to my wife, and I was like, "Well, you know, how do we, what, how do we feel about this? What do we think?" And we kind of, and I even said, I was like, "I think that they're just like making this list so that they're covering their bases, like no matter like wherever they, if something comes up on the day, this is right before intimacy coordinators,
Yeah,
like
I was just gonna
right
ask
before,
about that. Yeah, like
yeah." So we did
what?
not have one. And so I was like, I think that they're just, we didn't, I don't even think I knew there was a thing yet. It was like, hadn't become a phrase that was common yet, hadn't become a role that was common yet. And so I had said to her, like, I think they're probably just throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall just to make sure they have their bases covered. And then we got there to shoot, and I was like, oh no, these are the specific, this is basically a shot list. We're going to
We're
run
going
down
directly through this,
very
all of this.
specific. Yeah. And it was really funny. And I, in principle and in action, I very much am grateful for the role of an intimacy coordinator. I think it's really important. I think that it gets weirdly misconstrued sometimes as just like the prude police, which is like not the way that it's supposed to be handled at all.
No, it makes a better sex scene.
It's like I think of it all. I think of all pushback the same way that stunt coordinators got pushback 50, 60 years ago. It's like now we look at it and you go, well, of course you need that. I guess it's more than that now that we're getting old, but
It's like
like,
100 years
yeah,
ago,
100 years ago, when stunt
yeah.
coordinators became a thing, it was like, no, we don't need a stunt coordinator. That guy just falls off a horse. He's gonna be fine. And now we realize, like, oh no, you do need a guy in charge of that part. You need a person in charge of that. And now we understand that about sex scenes too, and about intimacy at all. Having said that, this was right before that, so we didn't know that part.
Having said that, we didn't have that at all. And I signed a piece of paper that said I'm fine with everything. Yeah.
And to their credit, though, and so my wife and I, we were like, yeah. Whatever, we really trust the show. We really love the show. Anytime that sex had been used in the show, anytime that sex or nudity had been used in the show, it had been used with a purpose. It had been used with intent. It was not gratuitous. It was not flippant. So even though I didn't know they, and they, I guess you can tell me if this was not true for you. I didn't get the whole episode. They were not giving to me the whole episode.
I
So I didn't get
got
the whole script.
everything. I got yours
Okay.
and mine because I was in the first chunk and you were in part two, but I didn't get
Yeah.
part three.
Okay. I just realized, sorry to interrupt. I have a social media timer on my phone that is going to go off in 10 at 10. So I'm hoping that my link doesn't shut down. I'll figure it out real quick. Maybe do another pitch for coffee if I have to fix this
Yeah, what does
real
that
quick.
mean? Like, it means that you gotta
Yeah, like goes to sleep, you know, that all my social media shuts off at 10. I mean, I can reopen it, but I just like it takes that extra step, and usually that helps me not be on my phone late at
Oh,
night
that's
when
smart. It's not bad when I mean that's like bad when like you're like on a show,
Yeah,
like
right.
now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I forgot about it. I just got the little 5 minutes.
This is not social media, so you might be okay. This is a
Might be
website.
okay. I think the web browser might do it, but I'll click on it. I'll give
Well,
you a
if
few of the
you leave,
options.
I'll just be like, so things
Yeah,
and
if I
stuff.
bounce
Yeah.
out real quick, talk about coffee again for a minute, but I'll be right back when
No problem. I will talk about coffee.
With the episode, with that shoot, I got a set and they were very cool about it. We had many different versions of things that could cover things, and there were di many different Modesty Houdinis of different sorts, and there were different pouches to put things away in. But we really ran down that list of very detailed and very varied sexual positions. And I still would say I trusted it, and I trust it now, and I'm proud of it. And also, it was even like more thoughtful than I even realized at the time. Like, if you were to go back and watch it, it is a male female, or male female male, whatever, sex scene. But it is, all of it is done, all of the sex stuff is shot with the intent that she is the principal character. She's
It's
absolutely the principal of the three of
well
us.
done. Yeah, it's
And then
well
the
done.
sex stuff, like, it's for her benefit. It's shot in a way that is her scene, as opposed to, you know, like the pornographic version of that is often a woman is a prop in a you know threesome like that. It would not be kind or thoughtful to a woman at all. And this is like the opposite. Like at its most raw, he and I are props, and we're kind of supposed to be doofy. We're like we were cater waiters that picked her up at an event the night before, and we took her to a
Yeah.
hotel, you know. And so like even with that, and I have full frontal in that, but it's not like sex, like it's not like boner full frontal. Like I'm laying in bed, and there's like a quick wipe, and there's my peen. But it was like, you know, Ben did it on the show too, and like it was kind of one of those things. I was like,
Yeah.
yeah, whatever. Like, it's not. I don't think it's a penis to write home about, but it's a penis, and who, you know, like whatever. I'll put my penis out there,
Yeah,
whatever.
like what like before I was married, I didn't give a shit. I would be just like naked everywhere. Not illegally, but like for things. But it was a thing that I felt should because like and she had an issue and I was like, I'm glad I asked because if I was just like, yeah, and then all of a sudden we were like watch because like I had like I had a premiere party for it where like my like in-laws came and all this stuff and we like had a big party. So if my like dick was just out, it
Yeah,
would have
well,
gone.
I spread the word as best I could about what exactly I was doing in this episode, but not everyone in those kinds of like in-laws and down the path and like cousins and in-laws of cousins. And I had a lot of people who were like, oh man, I watched that with my mother-in-law and I did not know what was coming, man.
Well, that happened with this party. Like I was like, oh, my friend Jonathan's in it. I think he's holy shit. Like and I remembered in the moment, and like my part ended and yours popped on, and like your scene started to like really go. And I was looking over at my mother-in-law who was like hiding herself, and my wife like comes up to me and she's like, are you in this episode anymore? And I was like, I'm not, but let's just keep watching it. It's really good. And your mom's already in it. So let's just keep it going.
Well, please, you know, send my apologies to your mother-in-law. My mom has told me she's not watched it. I told her, I was like, listen, make your choices, mom. Here's what it is. I will tell you what it is. I'm proud of it. I'm glad that I did the job. I think that it's worthy. I think it's valuable television. Also, this is exactly what it is. I don't think you're gonna want to watch it. But if you want to watch it, go to town.
Go
And
for it. Yeah.
she's told me that she is not. I don't know if she feels like she's saving me in that instance, or if she actually stuck to her word and has not watched it.
Maybe she's, yeah, I don't know. And then the next thing, and then we'll move on from it is not that it's not cool, but like I want to talk about the like other stuff too, is you worked with one of my like acting heroes. You worked with Juan Carlos Esposito on Kaleidoscope quite a bit, actually. You were in that episode like the whole time, and you had a really cool role. Like I know it was like a dude that's like, ah, fuck you, I'm a dude guy, but like it was a cool character. Like it was a really fun
Thanks, man. That
Cool
was a
to
lot of
watch.
fun. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And yeah, Giancarlo was very cool. It was very cool to be. He was very like, very welcoming, very, very cool. He had like, I mean, it was kind of like Robert Townsend was the director of the episode I was in, and they like, so he's a director, but Giancarlo is like an important person with who is one of the leads of the show, who has thoughts and opinions and educated perspective on this, so like he's a powerhouse, and he is also he's I go into that and I'm like, okay, I mean, I clearly I have my thoughts on my role here, but I'm pretty malleable in this. I'm going to do what the director and the showrunner tell me to do here. And I don't come in with a lot of like perspective on the bigger picture. And it was frankly it was fun because he wasn't a dick, he wasn't a diva, but he was a powerful presence who had thoughts and had stakes in the show, and was a part of the whole process. And it was like it was I don't know, it was cool to see a guy who was like very friendly to me. We were hanging out, like we like he was very welcoming, very warm, very friendly, and also be a have a powerful presence in the decision making on set as a as the as a principal actor, still have that kind of like drive and power himself. He was just cool, and he's a lot of fun, and I mean obviously brilliant, obviously like an incredible actor, but it was just like a lot of fun to be around.
Yeah, the first time I was ever around him on a set is when I was doing background work, like in the beginning of my career. And there was this cop show that didn't get a full season. It was called the 2-2. It was a Robert De Niro executive produced cop show, and he played this like homeless guy, recurring crazy person on the show. And I remember just watching him just go fucking crazy in the street, and I was just staring at him. And one of the ADs was like, "Yeah, that's John. He's incredible. He's been working for forever, and he's a force." And I was like, "Yeah, he's a fucking force. This guy's amazing. Like, I can't wait to see him do more." And then all of a sudden, he just exploded. And I know that it wasn't all of a sudden. That's like not how it works. But like he just blew the fuck up, and like he was in Breaking Bad and just like went fucking nuts. And it was cool to like see, and like watching him like throw rolls of toilet paper at people's heads in this show that never went anywhere, and then having him do what he's doing now, he's in everything, is really cool. And just watching you work with him and play off of him so well and so incredibly fucking naturally, and just it was so cool to
Thanks, man. A
see.
lot of I did not feel, this is just one of those like in the gig, like I did not feel natural. I've been out of work for a while. It was like coming off the holidays. I feel like I shot that like I don't even remember exactly, but it was like it had been a minute. I was like in my head about a lot of it, but he was so cool. And I think that I watching it, then it's always a little hard to separate for me. It's like hard to separate and watch myself, totally objectively. But I was part of that one, but a big part of it was because, it's little stuff, but he was really instrumental. He was proactive in he thought it was cool for us to have a cool relationship. I'm the prison guard and he's the old timer who's been in there for a long time. And so he was kind of like creating these moments for us, and these little looks and these asides that they would shoot it. They would pick it up as like, little moments between us, and like it made the whole thing. And it that then I could kind of sit in that, and I could be like, oh yeah. So it helped me feel Creasy, Officer Creasy. It helped me like feel out, like kind of flesh that out. I was like, oh yeah, this guy. So like, all right, yeah, he's a grump, but also he's cool with the inmates that are cool. Is it like it, and it helps me kind of like really get some. I don't know. It helped me sit in that character better, and that was purely just because he was. Because I was like, I don't know. The first day that I shot, I was a prison guard telling one of the guys to get back to his cell from visitation, and it's one of the principals, and I'm like, I'm frankly having a hard time being a dick to this guy because it's like, I'm very much in my own head right now. It was my first day on set, my first day on set on any set in a long time, and here's a a celebrity, a star, who's this is his show, and it was just like hard to like be the burly dick to this guy, And so that like took a few takes to get into. Talk about thinking you're never going to work again. I was like, oh,
Right.
dude, and then I get further in my head. And so it really, really did help when he was like really chill, really inviting, really cool, and helped me like really sit into it a lot better.
That's fucking awesome, man. I'm so happy that you had that experience. That's so
Thank you. It was
cool.
a lot of fun. It was fun. And it took like I really enjoyed that one because it did take a couple of days. Because the first day, that first day, I was like, "Oh no, man! Like I can't do this anymore." And like, ugh, this. But Eric Garcia, the showrunner who created the show, and Giancarlo, they were both like, and Robert, the director. Like, I mean, everyone was great, but like specifically those guys. Eric was went out of his way to be friendly to me, and Giancarlo was great to work with, and Robert was really open and friendly and like encouraging to try things. And so, like, yeah, that was a. Ended up being like a really great experience and really helped me get out of my head on set.
That's great. Let's jump back quick because we're running out of time. This has gone so fast. It's been so awesome. This is a great
Yeah,
conversation.
that's why my timer, that's why my timer snuck up on me. I had no idea that it was this late already.
This was a great date, man. We had a great
We
date night
did.
together here on the internet. I know that you started painting your nails to connect more with your daughter and you've going through this like hair braiding journey. Hey, thumbs up thing. All right. You're getting better and better at it. And it's inspiring other men to do these types of things. I believe the metric is that once you have over 30,000 people on your social media, then you're technically famous. So then you've got like 130,000 now, so you're like officially internet famous. But just seeing you in life, like when you do make your content, as it's called, just being in your car or taking your kids to school and having your nails painted or just talking about braiding hair or any of that stuff that's considered ultra feminine, and you're just like, yo, bro, I'm just here today, and your hands going back and forth. Like I used to paint my nails when I was in high school, so to me it's not a big thing, but to a lot of men, they're like, how the fuck are you doing that and not like lighting on fire? And I know that it probably wasn't like an issue for you at all, but I wonder, like, was it a little bit? Was it weird going out in public with it?
Well, it's funny, like on the internet, not at all. So I used to like when I in my 20s, even in my 30s, not younger in school, but in my probably not until my 30s actually, but I used to paint my toes in the summer. I just thought it was fun, like whatever. I like who gives a shit. It was a fun little I had a couple of hipster friends who did it, and I was like, yeah, that's fun, let's do that. And so I was painting my toes, and then yeah, then when we had kids, and it is to connect with my daughter, but it's also to connect with my son because I really genuinely like want my son, I want both of my kids, any kids now, I want them coming up in a world, ideally for me, they would grow up in a world where that doesn't even strike them as a feminine thing. That doesn't have to be a gender label to anything. And you know, there's further to go past that as far as progress if we go as a people and how to respect each other and be in a society of respect. But I think in a kind of easy step, or at least a possible step, is to do away with the gender labels on things like nail polish. Because like the way I look at it is like you don't have to like it as a fashion choice, but like my wife doesn't like my mustache, you know, like she's so like that's fine. You can make a fashion choice not everyone likes. Like it's you know, like you don't have to like everything, but if you think it's like, ooh, it's too femme, and that means that it's less than, that means it's a problem, then that's where I don't want that to continue. I want to buck against that. I want to try to stop that. And so yeah, I got the hair thing, the nail thing was that. Yes, I want to paint my nails. I want my kids to and look, I did not grow up that way. I grew up what I don't think of it as less than, but I know very much that the world does, that there's a lot of that perspective out there. And so even as a grown man, even now as a grown man on the internet, I don't give a shit. They're not painted right now, but like I don't care. In fact, I love that. Sometimes the videos are about nail polish. Sometimes, like you just were saying, it's I intentionally don't even reference it. I just have them in the video. They just happen to be my hands and
Yeah.
they're painted. Cause I love that message too, that it's just there, that it's not even, it's not the thing. That's not a, it's not a brand. It's not anything. It's just is. But in real life, it can be a little different sometimes, you know, like I've gone to parent events at my son's school and sitting next to like another dad from Queens. And we're like, I don't know, building gingerbread houses in this class, you know, whatever. And like, I've got sparkling nails and I've got to like talk to this other grown man from Queens. And like, I got to like, remember like, yeah, don't make it weird. It's not weird. It's not weird. It's not weird. And sometimes kids ask, and I actually love it when that happens, when like little boys in my son's class would be like, why are your nails painted? And I'd be like, cause I like the color. Do you like it? Like there's no, I don't, no, there has, it doesn't have to be anything else. It doesn't have to be a weird reason or a bigger reason. Just like, oh yeah, I like the color. Do you think it's cool? And 10 times out of 10, kids were like, 10 times out of 10, kids are like, oh yeah, cool. And moved, didn't care.
Yeah, that's the thing. Kids don't fucking care.
No, like, they don't care.
They don't give a
shit.
They
didn't like teach any big lesson because it didn't matter. They didn't care. They didn't care.
Yeah, they don't care. They're just like, all right, cool, man.
Yeah.
See ya. Yeah.
Exactly.
It, like that shit is like taught to kids. That's how they learn. Like here where I live, I have a pride flag on my house that I have had on this house for years and years and years. And we get tons of shit for it from our neighbors. We've had crap mailed to our house. We have people ask us questions all the time. And when we explain why it's there, we get like a lot of like, oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. And it's like, yeah, I got a gay brother, you know, like I got people in my life that I really care about. And that's why I fly it. It's not because I'm trying to own you with this pride flag. And
yeah. And a lot of times, like with the nail polish stuff, like I don't need to always, it's not always a platform. It's always going to be a thing. So a lot of times in the real world, it's like, yeah, I got kids. Like that's the, and people online all the time are like I got manly dude, traditionally car mechanics and farmers and oil riggers that are on here talking about how they paint their nails too. Cause they had a daughter who wanted to paint their nails and they're like, nobody's ever gonna say shit to me about it, so I paint my nails, you know.
Yeah, because I'll fucking kill them because I'll smack them to death.
Yeah. So I dig that side, you know. Like I kind of would like to push it a little further and say, like, yeah, and also you felt cool about that because you had a reason. That reason doesn't have to be that you had a daughter. It can be. That's like a fine reason too. But it also can be because you fucking like color. You pick out your shoes, you know, you pick out the shirt you wear, you pick out what belt you want, you make fashion choices. This could just be, you know, in my ideal world, it's just it's in the Rolodex of fashion choices that you do or do not like. You don't have to like it. You just have it as an option. And the hair thing was because I'm the drop-off parent. My wife has a better, more well-paying job and starts her workday earlier than I do. So I have always been the drop-off parent, and I have enough pride in myself, my family, that I was not going to send my daughter to hair with that. Send my daughter to school with ratty hair.
Dude, you know, that was like one of the hardest things to learn how to do too. Like doing her hair in the morning, like, and making it look not like shit was like, because it's that exact reason. Like you want to send her to school.
Yeah.
You want to send your kids looking good. You want them to feel good.
You remember the kid, and I have to admit, sometimes it's my son because he's just got short dude hair. He's got little boy hair. And sometimes he goes in looking like he just got out of bed. He's just like, you know, because like I totally forgot to run a brush through his hair in the morning because I was busy, like, you know, not being too fancy anymore. Now we have like no time in the morning. So it used to be I had extra time with my daughter and I could beef with Miss Yolanda and we could like battle through hairstyles. But now it's just like, throw it in a bun. Let's get it in a pony. Let's do something with it. But like, let's make it look nice. Let's make it not look ratty. Yeah.
Because you care. Yeah. You care so much more about the way that they look and what they're eating than I ever. Like, I started to care more about what I was doing with myself because I cared so much more about what I was doing for them. And like it, like I was always active and I like blah blah blah, and I was exercised, but I like changed the way that I exercise and I changed the way that I eat and all of this stuff and like to get even healthier so I can be around longer for them. And like we were talking about it earlier. If you're doing it right, you're trying to make everyone's lives better, yours included, so that you can have a full life of like being able to run and pick them up and play ball and shit, and they can have horsey rides on you and all that stuff.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than being like, oh, I'm too tired and hurt right now to play with you. Like,
yeah, I'm too weak. I don't have enough arm. I can't do a push-up anymore. I can't do a horsey ride. Like that feels very shitty. Like, I don't ever want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, we should stop. We're
All
really
right.
over time.
All
Not
right.
that there is a time, but it's just like I try not to keep people longer than an hour because it's selfish if I do. So
Well, selfishly, I've had a great time. I really appreciate you having me on, and I just want to make sure I say I really appreciate what you're doing too, man. I like there are so many loud, weak men out there that I think I love when I see genuinely strong men, men who are willing to show that they're learning and willing to show what they've learned and willing to grow and grow for their kids and grow for the sake of themselves and everyone. So keep it up, man. I'm really proud to know you and glad to see what you're doing.
Oh, thanks, man. I really fucking appreciate that. That's really kind of you to say. And it's super mutual. Like, you are a goddamn inspiration, Jonathan Gregg. I'm not even like being weird and crazy silly. Like, it's beautiful to see you and your family and just how you walk through life. It is fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, man. Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Of
And
course.
look, like I said, I yell at my kid. My son made a sign yesterday that said "No dad" because he did not want me near him for a little while. Like, it's not like I get it right. I'm just willing to learn, and I'm willing to say that I don't know it all, and I hope that that's enough.
And you're not just like slamming more like nine martinis a night, being like, shut up, son, go play with the lawnmower.
The at least the what I will accept as and what I will be proud of is that I am willing to learn and I'm willing to admit that I'm wrong and I'm willing to admit that there's growth and that I think strength is in that. So yeah, I'll take
That's great, man.
that.
All right. Thank you so much, and I'll speak to you soon.
That sounds great, man. Thank you.
Good night. How about Jonathan Gregg, huh? What a cool guy. I'm so happy that you all got to meet him. You got to hear us talk about having kids and such and acting world and nudity before intimacy coordinators and embarrassed mother-in-laws and all of that stuff. Again, I really appreciate you being here. I hope you had as much fun as we did. Once again, a word from my sponsor really quick, Lucas Roasting Company. They're a wonderful indie coffee roaster located in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. You take 15% off with the live stream live code. They have a great website. Everything is delicious. The new year is packed so far with tons of guests. We've got actors, writers, producers, cinematographers, and every week until April right now, depending on when my child is born, there's going to be a little bit of a lull. Probably about 2 weeks or so I can adjust to having another child. I'm sure that'll be fun and interesting. But it should be all right. We've already done it before, right? So until next week, next week we have a really amazing opera singer coming on, who's really blowing up right now. He's Hawaiian. His name is Quinn, and I can't wait for you to meet him. Until next time, thank you for watching the live stream live. And if you're listening here on a podcast the next day, thanks for listening. I know it's probably weird hearing a live show after the fact. All right, bye-bye. Thank you and good night.